and I'd done a lot from time to time to inspire his rage. Samuel patted me on the back.
It's not often I see you absolutely speechless.
So you had Charles teach me how to fix cars and how to drive them. Charles was Brand's oldest son. He hated to drive, and until that summer I thought he couldn't drive. I should have known better. Charles can do anything, and everything he did very well. That's only one of the reasons that Charles intimidates me and everyone else.
Kept you busy and out of trouble for a whole summer, said Brand smugly.
He was teasing, but serious as well. One of the oddest things about being grown up was looking back at something you thought you knew and finding out the truth of it was completely different from what you had always believed. It gave me courage to do what I did next. I need some advice, I told him.
Sure, he said easily.
I took a deep breath and started with my killing Marsilia's best hope of returning to Italy, jumped to Stefan's appearance in my living room and the unexpected visit from my old college nemesis, and ended it all with the nearly fatal adventure at Uncle Mike's and the little bag that smelled like vampires and magic. I told him about Mary Jo and my fear that if I told Adam about the bag, it would cause a war.
I'll stop by and see if I can help Mary Jo, Bran said after I'd finished. I know a few tricks.
Samuel looked relieved.
Good.
So, I told Bran, it is my fault. I chose to go after Andre, but Marsilia's not attacking me.
You expected a vampire to be straightforward? Asked Bran.
I supposed I had. Amber gives me a reason to get out of town for a little while. Without me around, Marsilia might leave everyone else alone. And it would give me a chance to think through my response. A day or two to figure out something that wouldn't lead to more killing.
And give Adam and me a chance to mount a proper response, Samuel growled.
I started to object, but they had the right to go on the offensive, the right to know that they were targets. As long as Mary Jo survived, Adam wouldn't bring a war to Marsilia's doorstep. And if Mary Jo didn't survive, perhaps Marsilia was crazy. I'd seen that kind of madness in the Morax pack, where the oldest wolves often came to die.
If you leave, Marsilia might take that as a victory, said Bran. I don't know her well enough to know if that will help you or hurt you in the end. I do think that getting out of here for a few days might not be a bad idea.
He didn't say Marsilia would quit targeting my friends, I noticed. I was pretty sure Uncle Mike would figure out that the vampires had used his place to target the wolves, and if I thought that, Marsilia surely would. She must be truly furious if she was willing to anger Uncle Mike and enrage Adam in order to get to me. I was betting that if I left, she'd wait, because she wanted me to witness the pain I'd made her rain down upon my friends. But I wasn't sure. Still, it wouldn't hurt. The problem is, there's something a little off about Amber's offer. Or maybe just after Tim... I swallowed. I'm afraid to go. Bran looked at me with keen yellow eyes, weighing something in his mind.
Fear is a good thing, he said at last. It teaches you not to make the same mistake twice. You counter it with knowledge. What are you afraid of?
I don't know, which wasn't the right answer.
Gut check, Bran said. What does your gut tell you?
I think that maybe it's the vampires again. Stefan lands in my lap to give me a good scare, and look, here's a way out, out of the frying pan and into the fire. Samuel was already shaking his head.
Marsilia isn't going to send you to Spokane to get you out of our protection before she takes care of you. Not that it isn't a good idea, but she'd send you to Seattle, maybe. She has some allies there. But in Spokane, there's only one vampire, and he doesn't allow visitors. There are no packs, no fey, nothing but a few powerless creatures who managed to stay out of his sight.
I felt my eyes widen. Spokane is a city of nearly 500,000 people. That's a lot of territory for a single vampire.
Not for that single vampire, said Samuel, at the same time Bran said, not for Blackwood.
So, I said slowly, what will this vampire do if I stay in Spokane for a few days?
How would he know? Bran asked. You smell like coyote.
But a coyote smells a lot like a dog to someone who doesn't hunt in the forests, which, I assure you, James Blackwood doesn't do. And most dog owners smell like their pets. I wouldn't want you to move to Spokane, but a couple of days or weeks won't put you in danger.
So, do you think it's a good idea if I go?
Bran raised his hip and pulled his cell phone out of his back pocket.
Don't you break them like that? I asked. I killed a couple of phones by sitting on them.
He just smiled and said into the phone, Charles, I need you to find out about an amber. He looked at me and raised an eyebrow.
Sorry to wake you, Charles. Chamberlain was her maiden name, I told Samuel's brother apologetically. I don't know her married name.
Charles would hear me as clearly as I heard him. Private phone calls around werewolves needed headsets, not a cell phone speaker.
Amber Chamberlain, Charles repeated. That should limit it to 100 people or so.
She lives in Spokane, I said. I went to college with her.
That helps, he told us. I'll get back to you.
Arm yourself with knowledge, said Bran when he hung up. But I don't see why you shouldn't go.
Take some insurance with you.
It's Stefan, I shouted. Before I had the last word out of my mouth, Bran had Stefan up against the opposite wall from where he'd been sitting.
Da! Samuel was on his feet as well, a hand on his father's shoulder. He didn't try to pry Bran's hands off Stefan's neck. That would have been stupid.
Da! It's all right. This is Stefan, Mercy's friend.
After a very long couple of seconds, Bran stepped back and dropped his hands from Stefan's throat. The vampire hadn't fought back, which was good. Vampires are tough. Maybe tougher than wolves, because vampires are already dead. Stefan had been one of Marsilia's lieutenants, powerful in his own right. He'd been a mercenary in life, which had been in Renaissance Italy. But Bran is Bran.
That was stupid, said Samuel to Stefan. What part of never sneak up on a werewolf don't you understand?
The Stefan I knew would have bowed gracefully, expressed his apologies with a hint of humor. This Stefan gave a stiff jerk of his neck.
I'm no use here. It's a good idea to get Mercy out of the line of fire. She's the weakest target. Send me to keep her safe in Spokane.
He sounded almost eager, and I wondered what he'd been doing since he'd left Adams. What was there for him to do? Maybe I wasn't the only one who was trying to find some action to take that wouldn't get me and everyone I cared about killed. Still, I couldn't let him get away with calling me weak, I said. Samuel turned on Stefan with a growl.
Stupid vampire! My father had her nearly talked into going, and you ruined it!
I laughed. I couldn't help it. I hoped going to Spokane would keep my friends safe, and they hoped me going to Spokane would keep me safe. Maybe we were both right. Bran's phone rang, and we all listened to Charles tell us that Amber was married to Corbin Wharton, a moderately successful corporate lawyer, about 10 years her senior. They had an 8-year-old son with some sort of disability, hinted at in various newspaper articles, but not expressly stated. He rattled off an address or two, cell phone numbers and real phone numbers, and social security numbers and most recent tax reports, personal and business. For an old wolf, Charles knows how to make computers sit up and beg.
Thank you, said Bran.
I can go back to sleep now, asked Charles.
He didn't wait for an answer. Just hung up his end of the connection.
I looked at Samuel. It will make your life easier if I leave.
He nodded.
We can protect ourselves, but you are too vulnerable. And if you aren't here, if Marsilia doesn't know where you are, we can get her to the table for negotiations.
Bran looked at Stefan.
A vampire might draw too much attention in Spokane.
Stefan shrugged.
I'm not without resources. I was in this room for a quarter of an hour, and none of you noticed me. If I feed well, no one will know what I am.
You always smell like vampire to me, I told him. Vampire and popcorn. The good buttery kind.
No, I don't know why. I've never seen him eat the stuff. I don't know that vampires can.
He raised his hands.
No one without Mercy's nose, then. If I'm in the room with the monster, then perhaps he'll notice. Otherwise, he'll never know I was there. I've done it before.
The monster? Samuel asked.
James Blackwood.
Vampires give titles to some of the more powerful ones. Stefan was the soldier because he'd been a mercenary. Wolf was the wizard, and I knew he could do some magic. I resolved to stay away from any vampire that other vampires called the monster.
There is this, too, Stefan said. I can jump from one location to another, and I can take a mercy with me.
How far? Asked Bran with sudden intentness.
Stefan shrugged, and never quite straightened up, as if it was too much trouble.
Anywhere. But taking another person with me has a cost. I'll be useless for a day afterward.
He looked at me.
I have the address.
He'd have overheard Charles give it to the rest of us.
I can get there tonight and find a safe place nearby to spend the day.
Bran raised an eyebrow at me. I'll call Amber in the morning, I said. It felt like running away, but Bran seemed to think it was the right thing to do. Stefan swept me a perfect bow and disappeared before he stood up. He used to hide his ability to do that, I told them. It worried me that he wasn't hiding it anymore, as if it didn't matter what people knew about him. Samuel smiled at me.
You decided to go to Spokane because he needs to do something, didn't you? You were all set to stay until he started looking pathetic.
I gave him a look, and he raised his hands in surrender.
I didn't say he didn't have a reason to look pathetic. You just need to remember that, sad sack or not, he's still a vampire, and more than a match for you if he decides not to be friendly. You cost him a lot, Mercy. He might not be your friend.
I hadn't thought about it that way, so I did, for maybe a tenth of a second. If he was mad at me, he'd have killed me when he dropped in here starving. For that matter, he could have come here any time tonight and killed me. You need me gone, so quit trying to make trouble. Samuel frowned at me.
I'm not trying to make trouble, but you have to remember he is a vampire, and vampires are not nice guys no matter how chivalrous and gallant Stefan appears. I like him too, but you are trying to forget what he is.
I thought about the two dead people whose only crime was that they had seen me when I staked Andre. I know what he is, I said stubbornly.
Vampire, said Bran. Evil, yes.
He grinned, and it made him look like he should be going to high school.
But I think his mistress made a mistake when she chose to throw him away.
She broke him, I said. And looking into Samuel's eyes, I whispered, You stay safe, you and Adam. I'll keep Stefan busy looking for ghosts. If I was really looking for ghosts, of course, it would be stupid to bring Stefan. Ghosts don't like vampires, and they won't come out when there are vampires around. Samuel knew that, and he grinned at me with serious eyes.
We'll be fine.
Call me if you need me, said Bran,
to both of us, I thought.
If I'm going to stop in to have a look at Mary Jo, I need to go now.
He kissed me on my forehead, then did the same to Samuel, who had to bend down. I didn't know if he really knew who Mary Jo was, or just seemed to, but I'd never seen him meet a wolf he didn't know by name. Speaking of which, hey, Bran? Halfway to the door, he turned back. What about that girl we sent to you? The one who was changed so young and hadn't learned control? Is she all right? He smiled and looked a lot less tired.
Kara? She did fine last moon. Give her a few more months and she'll be fully in control.
Waving casually over his shoulder, he walked out into the dark. Get some rest, I called after him. He shut the front door behind him without answering. We listened while Bran drove off in a doubtlessly rented Mustang. Once he was gone, Samuel said,
You have a few hours. Why don't you get some more sleep? I think I'll hop the fence to Adam's and see what Dodd does for Mary Jo.
Why didn't he just call? I asked. Samuel reached out and ruffled my hair.
He was checking up on you.
Well, I said, at least he didn't ask me if I was okay. I think I'd have had to do something to him if he had.
Hey, Mercy, said Samuel with false solicitude. Are you okay?
I punched him, connecting only because he hadn't expected it. I am now, I told him as he dropped to the ground and rolled, as if I'd really had some force behind my fist, which I hadn't. Spokane is about 150 miles northeast of the Tri-Cities, and you know you're getting close when you start seeing trees. My cell phone rang, and I answered without pulling over. I usually obey the law, but I was late.
Mercy?
It was Adam, and he wasn't happy with me. I guess Samuel had told him about the vampires being responsible for the debacle at Uncle Mike's. I told him he could do it once I was safely out of town. Uh-huh. I pulled around an RV as we chugged up a small hill. It had passed me on the downhill side, but I had to take my passing pleasures where I could. Vanagons are not speed demons. One of these days, I was going to put a Subaru Flat 6 in it and see what that would do. Before you yell at me for not telling you about the vampires, you should know that I am risking a ticket by talking to you while I drive. Do you really want me to get a ticket for letting you yell at me? He gave a reluctant laugh, so I supposed he wasn't too upset.
You're still on the road? I thought you left this morning.
Fixed a shift linkage in a Ford Focus at that rest stop near Connell, I told him. Nice lady and her dog were stuck after having a clutch job done by her brother-in-law. He hadn't tightened down a few bolts, and one of them fell off. Took me an hour or so before we found someone who had a bolt and nut the right size. And I had the oil stains across my shoulders and the grit in my hair to prove it. In my rabbit, I kept a towel to put on the ground. I also kept a selection of useful car bits. It was going to be a while before my rabbit was up and running. How's Mary Jo?
She's sleeping for real now.
Bran helped?
Bran helped.
I could hear the smile in his voice.
You be careful ghost hunting. And don't let Stefan bite you.
There was just a little edge to the last. Jealous? I asked. Yep, the RV passed me on the downhill.
Maybe a little, he said.
Don't be. We'll be fine. Ghosts aren't as dangerous as crazy vampire ladies. I couldn't help the anxiety that crept into my voice.
I'll be careful. And Mercy... Consider yourself yelled at, he purred, then hung up.
I grinned at the phone and closed it. Amber's directions to her house had been clear and easy to follow. The relief in her voice when I'd called that morning made me want to believe she really had a ghost problem and wasn't part of some secret vampire conspiracy to get me somewhere I'd be easier to kill. Despite Bran's assurances that it was unlikely Marsilia would ship me off to Spokane, I was still feeling, not paranoid really, cautious. I was feeling cautious. Z had agreed to work the shop while I was gone. I probably could have gotten him to work cheaper than usual because he was still feeling guilty about stuff that wasn't his fault. Cheaper would mean I could eat peanut butter instead of ramen noodles for the rest of the month, but I didn't think any of it was his fault. He had talked to Uncle Mike about the crossed bones on my door. Definitely vampire work, he told me. The bones meant that I had broken faith with the vampires and was no longer under their protection, and anyone offering me aid of any kind was likely to find themselves on the wrong side of the vampires as well. The broad interpretation of that was horrifying. It meant that people like Tony and Sensei Johansson were at risk, too. It meant that it was probably a good thing that I get out of town for a few days and figure out how to limit the number of victims Marsilia could claim. Amber lived in a Victorian mansion complete with a pair of towers. The brick porch had been freshly tuck-pointed. The gingerbread work around the roof edge and the windows bore a new coat of paint. Even the roses looked ready for magazine display. Frowning at the leaded glass glistening in the sun, I wondered when I'd last cleaned the windows in my house. Had I ever cleaned the windows? Samuel might have. I was still thinking about it when the door opened. A startled boy gawked at me, and I realized I hadn't rung the doorbell. Hey, I said, is your mom home? He recovered quickly and gave me a shy look out of a pair of misty green eyes under long, thick eyelashes and turned to ring the bell I hadn't. I'm Mercy, I told him while we waited for Amber to emerge from the depths of the house. Your mom and I went to school together. His wary look deepened, and he didn't say anything. So I guessed she hadn't told him anything. Mercy, I was beginning to think you weren't coming. Amber sounded harassed and not at all grateful, and that was before she saw what I looked like, covered in old oil and parking lot dirt. Her son and I turned to look at her. She still looked like a show dog, but her eyes were stressed. Chad, This is my friend who's going to help us with the ghost. As she spoke, her hands flew in a graceful dance, and I remember Charles had said her son had some sort of disability. He was deaf. She turned her attention to me, but her hand still moved, letting her son know what she was saying. This is my son, Chad. She took a deep breath. Mercy, I'm sorry. My husband has a client coming over for dinner tonight. He didn't tell me until just a few minutes ago. It's a formal dinner.
She looked at me, and her voice trailed off.
What? I said, letting sharpness creep into my voice at the insult. Don't I look like I'm up to a formal dinner? Sorry, the stitches in my chin don't come out for at least a week.
Suddenly she laughed.
You haven't changed a bit. If you didn't bring anything suitable, you can borrow something of mine. The guy who's coming is actually pretty well house-trained for a cutthroat businessman. I think you'll like him. I've got to do some inventorying and run to the grocery store.
She tilted her head so her son could see her mouth.
Chad, would you take Mercy to the guest room?
He gave me another wary look, but nodded. As he went back inside the house and started up the stairs, Amber told me,
I'd better warn you. My husband is pretty unhappy about the ghost. He thinks Chad and I are making it up. If you could manage not to mention it at dinner in front of his client, I'd appreciate it.
There was a bathroom across from the room I was staying in. I took my suitcase and went in to scrub up. Before I stripped off my grimy shirt, I closed my eyes and took a deep breath. Sometimes ghosts only appear to one sense or another. Sometimes I can only hear them. Sometimes I can smell them. But the bathroom smelled like soap and shampoo, water, and those stupid blue tablets some people who didn't have pets put in their toilets. I didn't see anything or hear anything either. But that didn't keep the hair on the back of my neck from rising as I pulled off my shirt and stuffed it into the plastic compartment in my suitcase. I scoured my hands until they were mostly clean and brushed the dirt out of my hair and re-braided it. And all the while, I could feel someone watching me. Maybe it was only the power of suggestion, but I cleaned up as fast as I could anyway. No ghostly writing appeared on the walls. No one appeared in the mirror or moved stuff around. I opened the bathroom door and found Amber waiting impatiently right in front of the door. She didn't notice that she'd startled me.
I have to take Chad to softball practice and do some shopping for dinner tonight. Do you want to come?
Why not? I said with a casual shrug. Staying in that house alone didn't appeal to me. Some ghost hunter I was. Nothing had happened, and I was already jumpy. I took shotgun. Chad frowned at me, but sat in back. I didn't think I impressed him much. No one said anything until we dropped Chad off. He didn't look happy about going. Amber proved that she was tougher than me because she ignored the puppy dog eyes and abandoned Chad to his coach's indifferent care.
So, you decided not to become a history teacher, Amber said as she pulled away from the curb. Her voice was tight with nerves.
The stress was coming from her end, I thought. But then, she'd never been relaxing company. Decided isn't quite the word, I told her. I took a job as a mechanic to support myself until a teaching position opened, and one day I realized that even if someone offered me a job, I'd rather turn a wrench. And then, because she'd given me the opening, I thought you were going to be a vet.
Yes, well, life happened, she paused. Chad happened.
That was too much honesty for her, though, and she subsided into silence. In the grocery store, I wandered away while she was testing tomatoes. They all look good to me. I bought a candy bar, just to see how much she'd changed. Not that much. By the time she'd finished lecturing me on the evils of refined sugar, we were almost back to the house. She was feeling a lot more comfortable, and she finally told me more about her ghost.
Corbin doesn't believe we're haunted,
she told me as she threaded her way through the city. She glanced at my face and away.
I haven't actually seen or heard anything either. I just told him I had so he'd leave Chad alone.
She took a deep breath and looked at me again.
He thinks Chad might do better at a boarding school, a private place for troubled kids that a friend of his recommended.
He didn't look troubled to me, I said. Aren't troubled kids usually doing drugs or beating on the neighbor's kids? Chad had looked like he'd rather have stayed home and read than go to play ball. Amber gave a nervous half-laugh.
Corbin doesn't get along very well with Chad. He doesn't understand him. It's the old Disney cliché of a quarterback dad and bookworm son.
Does Corbin know he's not Chad's father?
She hit the brakes so hard that if I hadn't been belted in, I might have become better acquainted with her windshield. She sat there in the middle of the road for a moment, oblivious to the honking horns around us. I was glad we were in a stout Mercedes rather than the Miata she'd driven to my house. "You forget," I said blandly. "I knew Harrison, too. We used to joke about his eyelashes, and I've never seen eyes like his since. Not until today." Harrison had been her one true love for about 3 months until she dropped him for a pre-med student. Amber started forward again and drove for a little until traffic settled down. "I'd forgotten you knew him," she sighed. "Funny. Yes, Corbin knows he's not Chad's father, but Chad doesn't. It didn't used to matter, but I'm not so sure. Corbin's been different lately." She shook her head. "Still, he's the one who suggested I ask you to come over. He saw the article in the paper and said, 'Isn't that the girl you said used to see ghosts? Why don't you have her come over and have a look-see?'" I figured I'd been pushy enough, so I asked a question that was less intrusive. "What does a ghost do?" "Moves things," she told me. "It rearranges Chad's room once or twice a week. Chad says he's seen the furniture moving around." She hesitated. "It breaks things, too. A couple of vases my husband's father brought over from China. The glass over my husband's diploma. Sometimes it takes things." She glanced at me again. "Car keys, shoes, some important papers, of course, turned up in Chad's room under his bed. Corbin was pretty mad." "At Chad?" She nodded. I hadn't even met him, and I didn't like her husband. Even if Chad was doing everything himself, and I had no evidence to the contrary, throwing him into reform school didn't sound like the way to make things better. We picked up a morose Chad, who didn't seem inclined to converse, and she quit talking about the ghost. Amber was working in the kitchen. I tried to help, but she finally sent me to my room to stay out of her way. She didn't like the way I peeled apples. I brought a book from home, a very old book, with real fairy tales in it. It was borrowed, and I'd have to return it soon, so I was reading as fast as I could. I was taking notes on kelpies, thought extinct, when someone knocked at my door twice, and then opened it. Chad stood with a notebook and a pencil in hand. "Hey," I said. He turned the notebook around, and I read, "How much is my dad paying you?" "Nothing," I said. His eyes narrowed, and he ripped away that page and showed me the next one. Evidently, he'd thought about this for a while. "Why are you here? What do you want?" I set my book aside and stared back at him. He was tough, but he wasn't Adam or Samuel. He blinked first. "I have a vampire who wants to kill me," I told him. Which I shouldn't have, of course, but I wanted to see what would happen. Curiosity, Bran has told me more than once, might be as fatal for coyotes as it is for cats. Chad crumpled the paper and mouthed a word. Evidently he hadn't expected that response. I raised my eyebrow. "Sorry, you'll have to do better. I don't lip-read." He scribbled furiously. "L-Y-E-R," said his paper. I took his pencil and wrote "liar," L-I-A-R. Then I gave him back his notebook and said, "You want to bet?" He clutched his notebook to his chest and stalked off. I liked him. He reminded me of me. 15 minutes later, his mother barged in. "Red or purple?" she asked me, still sounding frantic. "Come with me." Bewildered, I followed her down the hall and into the master bedroom suite where she'd laid out two dresses. "I only have 5 minutes before I have to put the rolls in," she said. "Red or purple?" The purple had considerably more fabric. "Purple," I said. "Do you have shoes I can borrow, too, or do you want me to go barefoot?" She gave me a wild-eyed look. "Shoes I have, but not nylons." "Amber," I told her, "I will put on high heels for you, and I will wear a dress. But you aren't paying me enough to wear nylons. My legs are shaved and tan. That'll have to do." "We can pay you. How much do you want?" I looked, but couldn't tell if she was joking or not. "No charge," I told her. "That way I can leave when things get scary." She didn't laugh. I was pretty sure Amber used to have a sense of humor. Maybe. "Look," I told her, "take a deep breath. Find the shoes for me and go put your rolls in the oven." She did take a deep breath, and it seemed to help. When I went back to my room, Chad was there again with his notebook. He was staring at the walking stick on my bed. I hadn't brought it with me, but it had come anyway. I wished I could ask it what it wanted from me. I picked it up and waited until he was looking at me so he could read my lips. "This is what I use to beat problem children with." He clutched his notebook tighter, so I guessed his lip-reading skills were up to par. I put the stick back on the bed. "What did you want?" He turned his notebook around and showed me a newspaper article that had been cut out and was taped to a page of his notebook. "Alpha Werewolf's Girlfriend Kills Attacker," it said. There was a picture of me, looking battered and dazed. I didn't remember anyone taking pictures, but there were large chunks of that night I was pretty shaky on. "Yes," I said, like my stomach didn't suddenly hurt. "Old news." He turned the page, and I saw he had another observation for me. "There, letter R, no vampires." I guess spelling wasn't his strong suit. Even at 10, I'd been able to spell R. "Okay, thanks," I said. "Good to know. I guess I'll go home tomorrow." He dropped his hands to his sides, the notebook swaying back and forth with irritation like a cat's tail. He knew sarcasm when he heard it, even if he was lip-reading it. "Don't worry, kid," I told him more gently. "I'm not a part of the plot to send you off to kid prison. If I don't see anything, it doesn't mean that there's nothing to see. And I'll tell your father so, too." He blinked his eyes furiously, hugged his notebook again. He lifted his chin, a smaller, less stubborn version of his mother's. And he left. Amber trotted up the stairs double time and waved to me as she went past. I heard her knock, then open a door. "You need to clean up, too," she told her son. "You don't have to eat with us. There's a plate in the microwave, but I don't want you scuttling around trying to be unseen, either. You know how that irritates your father, so comb your hair, wash your hands and face." I stripped off my clothes and pulled on the purple dress. It fit just fine, a little tight in the shoulders and snugger in the hips than I preferred, but when I looked at it in the full-length mirror, it looked just fine. Amber Shar and I had always been able to trade clothes with each other. The heels were higher than was comfortable, but as long as we were staying in the house, they should be all right. Char's feet had been smaller than Amber's and mine. I brushed out my hair again, then French braided it. A touch of lipstick and eyeliner, and I was good to go. I wished it was Adam I was about to eat with instead of Amber, her jerk of a husband, and some important client. It was enough to make me wish I had a plate in the microwave, too.
Chapter 6. Neither of the two men who entered the house was handsome. The shorter man was slightly balding, with plump hands that had three thick gold rings on them. His suit was off the rack, but the rack had been expensive. His eyes were pale, pale blue, almost as pale as Samuel's wolf eyes. The resemblance made me want to like him. He stood by almost shyly as the other man hugged Amber.
"Hey, sweetie," Amber's husband said, and to my surprise there was honest warmth in his voice. "Thank you for fixing dinner for us on such short notice."
Corbin Wharton was striking rather than good-looking. His nose was too long for his broad face. His eyes were dark and wide-set, and smiling. There was something solid and reassuring about him. He was the kind of person that you'd want beside you in a courtroom. When he looked at me, he frowned briefly, as if trying to place who I was.
"You must be Mercedes Thompson," he said, holding out his hand.
He had a good handshake, a politician's handshake, firm and dry. "Call me Mercy," I said. "Everyone does." He nodded.
"Mercy, this is my friend and client, Jim Blackwood. Jim, Mercy Thompson, my wife's friend who is visiting us this week."
Jim was talking to Amber, and took just an instant to turn his attention back to Corbin and me. Jim Blackwood. James Blackwood. How many James Blackwoods were there in Spokane, I wondered in dumb panic. 5 or 6? But I knew, even though the strong cologne he wore kept me from scenting vampire, I knew I wasn't going to be lucky. He'd think I smelled like I had dogs, Bran had assured me. And even if he didn't, even if he knew what I was just visiting. He couldn't take offense at that, right? I knew better. Vampires could take offense at anything they liked. "Mr. Blackwood," I greeted him when he looked away from Amber. "Keep it simple. I didn't know if vampires could sense lies like the wolves could, but I wasn't going to say, "It's very good to meet you," or something similar when I was wishing myself 100 miles away. I did my best to keep a social smile on my face while stupid thoughts began to pile up. How was he going to eat with us? Vampires didn't. Not that I'd ever seen. What were the chances of a vampire showing up and it not being some plot of Marsilius? Blackwood hadn't sounded like a vampire who would do anyone's bidding.
"Call me Jim," he told me, just a hint of a British accent shading his voice. "I'm sorry to intrude on your visit, but we had some urgent business this afternoon, and Corbin insisted on bringing me home."
His round face was merry, and his handshake was even more practiced than Corbin's had been. If it weren't for that little talk I'd had with Bran, I'd never have known what he was.
"Shall we go eat now?"
Amber suggested, calm and in control now that the preparations were finished.
"It's ready and not going to get better if it sits around. I'm afraid I kept it simple."
Simple was pepper steak over rice with salads and fresh rolls, followed by homemade apple pie. Somehow, the food disappeared from the vampire's plate. I never saw him eat or touch his plate, though I kept half an eye on it with morbid fascination, maybe a little hope. If I'd seen even a single bite go in his mouth, then I'd have believed him to be just what he seemed. I stayed quiet while the men talked business, mostly contract language and 401ks, and I was very happy to stay unnoticed. Amber slipped in a sentence here and there, just enough to keep the conversation going. I heard Chad sneak by the dining room and into the kitchen. After a while, he left again.
"Very good meal, as always," the vampire told Amber. "Beautiful, charming, and a fine cook. As I keep telling Corbin, I am going to steal you one of these days."
I felt a chill go down my spine. He wasn't lying. But Corbin and Amber just laughed, as if it were an old joke. Just then, he looked at me.
"You've been awfully quiet tonight. Corbin tells me you went to school with Amber and you're from Kennewick. What is it you do there?"
"I fix things," I mumbled to my plate.
"Things?"
He sounded intrigued, just the opposite of what I'd hoped.
"Cars. Meet Mercedes, the VW mechanic," said Amber with a touch of the sharpness that had been her trademark in the old days. "But I bet I can still get her going on the Royal Families of Europe or the name of Hitler's German Shepherd."
She smiled at James Blackwood, the monster who kept his territory free of vampires or anything else that might challenge him. A coyote wouldn't be much of a challenge. Amber chatted on, almost nervously. Maybe she thought I'd jump up and tell her husband's valuable client that they'd brought me over to catch a ghost in the act. She wouldn't be worried about it if she knew what he was.
"You'd have thought with her background, she's half Blackfoot, or is that Blackfeet? Anyway, she never studied Native American history, just the European stuff."
"I don't like wallowing in tragedy," I told her, trying desperately to sound uninteresting. "And that's what Native American history is, mostly. But now I just fix cars."
"Blondie," said Corbin, "was the name of the dog."
"Someone told me she was named after the comic strip Blondie," I added. That supposition had led to many arguments among the Nazi trivia buffs I knew. I was hoping the conversation would devolve to Hitler. He was dead and could do no more harm, unlike the dead man in the room.
"You are Native American?"
asked the vampire. Had he tried to catch my eyes? I was very good at keeping my gaze from meeting other people's, unless it was on purpose, a useful skill around the wolves. I looked at his jaw and said,
"Half. My father. I never knew him, though."
He shook his head.
"I'm very sorry."
"Old news," I said, deciding that if Hitler wasn't going to distract him from me, maybe business would. It always worked with my stepfather. "I take it Corbin is keeping your company safely out of the courts?"
"He's very good at his job," said the vampire with a pleased and possessive smile. "With him beside me, Blackwood Industries will stay afloat for a few more months, eh?"
Corbin gave a hearty and heartfelt laugh.
"Oh, I think a few months at the least."
"To making money," said Amber, holding up her glass. "Lots of it."
I pretended to sip the wine with the rest of them, and was pretty sure that my idea of making money was several orders of magnitude less than theirs. He left at last. It hadn't been as horrible as I'd feared. The monster was charming, and, I hoped, unaware that I was anything except a not very interesting VW mechanic. Except for that one moment, I'd mostly avoided notice. Almost euphoric at my near escape, I didn't worry about ghosts at all while I changed. Then I went back downstairs to help Amber with the cleanup. She must have been worried or something, too, because she was nearly as giddy as I was. We had an impromptu water fight in the kitchen that ended in a draw when her husband stuck his head in the doorway to see what the noise was all about and nearly got a sponge in the face for his trouble. Discretion suggested that, having escaped detection once, I should head home in the morning. But Amber was a little drunk, so I decided that conversation could wait until later. Dishes clean, clothes wet and soapy, I left Amber necking with her husband in the kitchen. I opened the bedroom door to find Chad in the middle of my bed, his arms crossed over his chest. I could smell his fear from the doorway. I closed the door behind me and took a good look around the room. "Ghost?" I mouthed. He glanced around the room, too, then shook his head. "Not here? In your room?" He gave me a cautious nod. "How about we go in your room, then?" Terror breathing out of every pore, he slipped off the bed and followed me to his room. Brave kid. He opened his bedroom door cautiously, and then pushed it open, being very careful to keep his feet in the hallway. "I assume you don't usually keep that bookcase face down on the floor," I told him. He gave me a dirty look, but he lost some of his fear. I shrugged. "Hey, my boyfriend has a daughter." Boyfriend was such an inadequate word, and I had a pair of little sisters. None of them keeps a clean room. I had to ask. Except for the bookcase, it was hard to tell what part of the mess was a normal boy's habitat and how much the ghost had caused. But the bookcase, one of those half-size things people put in kids' rooms, was easy to fix. I squeezed past Chad and into the room. The bookcase was even lighter than I'd thought. When I started reshelving his books, he knelt beside me and helped. He read a little of everything, and not entirely limited to things I think a kid would read. Jurassic Park, Interview with the Vampire, and H.P. Lovecraft sat next to Harry Potter, and Naruto manga numbers 1 through 15. We worked for about 20 minutes to put everything to rights, and by the time we finished, he wasn't scared anymore. I could smell it, though. It was watching us. I dusted my hands off and looked around. "You usually keep your room this neat, kid?" He nodded solemnly. I shook my head. "You need help, just like your mom. My little sister kept fossilized lunches under her bed for the dust bunny she raised there." I picked up a game from the neat stack. "Want to play some Battleship?" I wasn't leaving him alone with that thing in there. Chad armed himself with a notebook, and we went to war. Historically, war has often been used as a distraction for problems at home. Both of us lay on our bellies on the floor facing each other and fired our missiles. Adam called, and I told him he'd have to wait. Battle must take precedence over romance. He laughed, wished me good night and good luck, just like that old war correspondent. Chad's two-point boat was devilishly well hidden, and he destroyed my navy while I hunted it fruitlessly. "Ah!" I cried with feeling. "You sank my battleship!" Chad's face lit with laughter, and someone knocked at the door. I supposed I hadn't needed to make so much noise, since Chad couldn't hear me anyway. "Come in," I said. Reading my lips, Chad looked suddenly horrified, and I reached over and patted his shoulder. The door popped open, and I rolled halfway over and looked back over my feet as if to see who it was. Most people would have needed to look, so I did, but I'd heard him coming. And Amber had never stalked angrily in her life. Stomp, yes. Stalk, no. Trust me, any predator knows the difference.
"Isn't it after bedtime?"
Corbin said. He was wearing a pair of sweats and an old Seattle Seahawks shirt. His hair was rumpled as if he'd been to bed. I supposed I'd woken him up. "Nope," I told him. "We're playing games and waiting for the ghost to show up. Want to join us?"
"There isn't a ghost," he said to his son out loud and in sign.
I'd started to like Corbin over dinner. He had seemed like a decent guy, but he was being a bully now. I rolled up until I was facing him. "Isn't there?" He frowned at me.
"There are no such things as ghosts.
I am very happy you've come here to visit, but I don't approve of encouraging nonsense. If you tell them there isn't one here, they'll believe you. Chad has enough to deal with without everyone thinking he's crazy.
He'd continued to sign, even though he was talking to me. I didn't know if he left out the bit where I was supposed to tell Chad and Amber there weren't any ghosts. He's a damn fine naval commander, I told Corbin, and I think he's too smart to make up ghosts. He signed my reply, too. Then he said,
he just wants attention.
He gets attention, I said. He wants to stop being scared because someone he can't see or hear is making a mess in his room. I thought you were the one who suggested I come check it out. Why did you do that if you don't believe in ghosts?
There was a loud bang as the car on the top of Chad's chest of drawers made a suicide run off its perch, zoomed 3 feet across the room to hit the bookcase, and fell onto the floor. I'd been watching it roll back and forth, just a little bit, out of the corner of my eye for the last 15 minutes, so I didn't jump. Chad couldn't hear it, so he didn't jump. But Corbin did. I got up and picked the car up.
Can you do that again? I asked, setting the car back on the top of the bookcase.
I knelt beside Chad and looked at him so he could see my mouth.
It just made that car fall off. We're all going to watch and see if it can do it again.
Silenced by the car's fall, Corbin sat down next to Chad and put a hand on his shoulder, and we all watched the car turn slowly in place, then fall off the back of the bookcase. Then the bookcase fell face down on the floor, right on top of Chad's plastic ocean fleet. I caught a glimpse of someone standing there, hands up, then nothing, and the sweet salt smell of blood that I'd been smelling since I first entered the room faded away. I stayed where I was while Corbin checked the bookcase in the car for devices or strings or something. Finally, he looked back at Chad.
Are you all right sleeping in here?
It's gone, I told them both, and Corbin obliged me by signing it.
Chad nodded, and his hands flew. At the end of it, Corbin grinned.
I guess that's true.
He looked at me.
He told me the ghost hasn't killed him yet.
Corbin hefted the bookcase upright again, and I looked down at the mess of books, and I looked down at the mess of books and game pieces. I waited until Chad glanced my way. Then I pointed at his two-hull destroyer, plainly visible, surrounded by white, useless missile pegs.
So that's where you hit it, you little sneak.
He grinned. Not a full-fledged grin, but enough that I knew he'd be fine. Tough kid. I left them to their manly nighttime rituals and went back to my room, all thoughts of going home tomorrow shelved. I wasn't going to abandon Chad to the ghost. I still had no idea how to get rid of it, but maybe I could help him live with it instead. He was already halfway there. Corbin knocked at my door a few minutes later, then cracked it open.
I don't need to come in, he said. He stared at me grimly. Tell me you didn't engineer that somehow. I checked for wires and magnets.
I raised my eyebrow at him. I didn't engineer anything. Congratulations, your house is haunted.
He frowned.
I'm pretty good at sniffing out lies.
Good for you, I told him sincerely. Now, I'm tired and I need to go to sleep.
He backed away from my doorway and started down the hall, but he hadn't gotten 2 steps before he turned back.
If it is a ghost, is Chad safe?
I shrugged. Truthfully, the smell of blood bothered me. Ghosts, in my experience, tend to smell like themselves. Mrs. Hannah, who used to visit my shop sometimes, both when she was alive and after she died, smelled like her laundry soap, her favorite perfume, and the cats who shared her home with her. I didn't think the blood was a good sign. Still, I gave him the truth as I knew it. I've never been hurt by a ghost, and I only know of a few stories where someone was hurt, mostly only bruises. The Bell Witch supposedly killed a man named John Bell in Tennessee a couple of centuries ago, but it was probably something other than a ghost. And old John died of poison that the witch was supposed to have put in his medicine, something more mundane hands could have done as well. He stared at me, and I returned it.
You date a werewolf, he said.
That's right.
And you say there are ghosts.
And fae, I told him. I work with one. After werewolves and fae, ghosts aren't such a leap now, are they?
I shut my door and went to bed. After a few long minutes, he retreated to his bedroom. I usually have a hard time sleeping in strange places, but it was very late, or really early, and I hadn't gotten a full night's sleep the night before, either. I slept like a baby. When I woke up the next morning, there were two puncture marks, complete with a nifty purple bruise on my neck. They were a lovely addition to the stitches in my chin, and my lamb necklace was gone. I stared at the bite in the bathroom mirror and heard Samuel tell me that I shouldn't count upon Stefan still being my friend, and Stefan making it clear that he needed to feed in order to avoid detection. I knew there were consequences to being bitten, but I wasn't sure what they were. Of course, I'd met another vampire last night. For a moment, I hoped it was him, that Stefan hadn't bitten me while I slept. Then I really thought about being bitten by James Blackwood, who scared the things that scared me, and I hoped it was Stefan. Stefan would have needed an invitation into the house, though. Had I asked him in and he'd somehow erased the memory? I hoped so. It seemed the lesser of two evils. The bathroom door popped open. I'd just come in to brush my teeth, so it wasn't locked. Chad stared at my neck, then looked at me, eyes wide. And I hoped it was Stefan, because I was going to stay here until I helped. Somehow. No, I told Chad casually. I wasn't lying about the vampires. I thought I wouldn't mention I'd received it last night if he didn't think of that himself. He didn't need to be worrying about vampires as well as ghosts. I shouldn't have told you about it, I said. I'd appreciate it if you didn't tell your folks. The vampires like it better if no one knows they're around, and they take measures to ensure that is true. He looked at me for a moment. Then he zipped an imaginary zipper across his lips, locked an invisible lock, and threw the key behind his back. Some things are universal. Thank you. I put the cap on my toothbrush and packed up my bathroom kit. Any more trouble last night? He shook his head and wiped a wrist across his forehead to wipe off imaginary sweat. Good. Do you get much activity from your ghost during the day? He shrugged, waited a moment, then nodded. So I'll talk to your mom and maybe go for a jog. No running in coyote form in the city, especially when my efforts to stay out of James Blackwood's way had already failed so spectacularly. But if I didn't run most days, I started to get cranky. And then we can stake out your room for a while. Is there anywhere else the ghost visits? He nodded and mimed eating and cooking. Just the kitchen or the dining room, too? He held up two fingers. Fine. I checked my watch. Meet you here at 8 sharp. I went back to my room, but I didn't catch Stefan's scent or anything out of the ordinary. Nor was there any sign of my necklace. Without it, I had no protection against vampires. Not that it had done me much good last night. Running in the city is not my favorite thing. Still, the sun was shining, making it unlikely that I'd run into a vampire for a while. I ran for about a half hour, then made a beeline for Amber's house. Her car was gone from the driveway. She had things to do, she told me. A hair appointment, errands to run, and some shopping. I told her Chad and I would amuse ourselves on our own. Still, I'd expected her to wait for me to return. I wasn't sure I'd have left my 10-year-old son alone in a haunted house. However, he seemed unfazed when he met me at the bathroom door just as my watch read 8 a.m. We explored the whole of the old house, starting with the bottom and working our way up. Not that it was necessary or important to explore, but I like old houses, and I didn't have any better plan than waiting for the ghost to manifest. Come to think of it, I didn't have any better plan after it manifested. Banishing ghosts was not something I'd ever tried, and everything I'd read about it over the years, not much, seemed to indicate that doing it wrong was worse than not doing it at all. The cellar had been redone at some point, but behind a smallish old-fashioned door, there was a room with a dirt floor filled with old wooden milk crates and junk stored down there by some long-ago person. Whatever its original purpose, it was now the perfect habitat for black widows. Wow! I pointed at the far corner of the ceiling with my borrowed flashlight. Look at the size of that spider! I don't know that I've ever seen one that big. Chad tapped me, and I looked at his circle of light, centered on a broken ladder-back chair. Yep, I agreed. That one's bigger. I think we'll just back out of here and look elsewhere, at least until we have a nice can of spider spray.
I shut the door a little more firmly than I might have. I don't mind spiders, and a black widow is one of the beauties of its kind, but they bite if you get in their way. Just like vampires. I rubbed my neck to make sure the collar of my shirt and my hair were still covering my own bite. This afternoon, I'd go shopping. I needed to pick up a scarf or high-necked shirt for better concealment before Amber or Corbin saw it. Maybe I could find another lamb necklace. The rest of the basement was surprisingly clean of junk, dust, and spiders. Maybe Amber hadn't been as intimidated by the widows as I'd been. "We're not trying to find out who the ghost is," I told him. "Though we could do that if you wanted to, I suppose. I'm just looking around to see what I can see. If this turns out to be a trick someone is playing, I don't want to be taken in." He slashed his hands down in a way that needed no translation, his eyes bright with anger. "No, I don't think you're doing it," I told him firmly. "If that was faked last night, it was beyond any amateur fiddling. Maybe someone has a bone to pick with your dad and is using you to do it." I hesitated. "But I don't think it was faked." Why would someone plant the smell of fresh blood too faint for a human nose, for instance? Still, I felt obligated to be as certain as I could that no one was playing tricks. He thought about that for a while, then gave me a solemn nod and pointed out things of interest. A small empty room behind a very thick door that might have been a cold room. The old coal chute with a box of old blankets placed near the end. I stuck my head in the metal tunnel and sniffed, but only to confirm my suspicions. Chad had been sliding down the coal chute for fun. His eyes peered worriedly out from under his too long hair. It didn't look dangerous to me. It looked fun. More fun if no one else knew. I'd had a few places like that when I was his age, so I didn't say anything. I showed him the old bare copper electrical wires, no longer in use but still present, and the quarry marks on the granite stone blocks used to wall in the basement. We checked out the basement ceiling below the kitchen and dining room. Since I didn't know exactly what had been happening in the kitchen and dining room, I didn't know what to look for. But it stood to reason that it would have been put in shortly before the haunting started, which was just a few months ago. Everything in that part of the basement looked as though it was older than I was. The next two floors weren't nearly as interesting as the basement. No black widows. Someone had thoroughly modernized them and left not so much as a trace of an old servant's stairway or dumbwaiter. The woodwork was nice, but pine rather than hardwood. The craftsmanship good, but not extraordinary. The house had been built by someone of the upper middle class, I judged, and not by one of the truly wealthy. My trailer had been built for the truly poor, so I was a good judge of such things. The ghost hadn't been to Chad's room since last night. Everything was neatly in place. As Corbin had said, there were no signs of wires or strings or anything that could have made the car shoot across the room. I supposed it could have been done with magic. I didn't know a lot about magic, but I hadn't felt any, and I usually can tell if someone's using magic near me. I looked at Chad. "Unless we find something really odd in the floor above your room, I'm pretty convinced this is the real deal." In my room, my brush was on the floor, but I couldn't swear I hadn't left it there. Under Chad's gimlet eye, I made my bed and stuffed the clothes I'd scattered all over the floor into my suitcase. "The real problem is," I told him as I tidied my mess and he sat on the bed, "that I don't know how to get the ghost to leave you alone. I can see it better than you, I think. You didn't see anything yesterday except the things moving around?" He shook his head. "I did. Nothing clear, but I could see it. But I don't know how to make it go away. It's not a repeater, a ghost that just repeats certain actions over and over. There's intelligence behind what it does." I had to say it twice for him to get it all. When he did, Chad's face twisted in a snarl, and he hissed. I nodded. "It's angry. Maybe if we can figure out what it's angry about, we can..." Something made a huge, crashing noise. My reaction must have given it away because Chad stood up and touched my shoulder. "Something downstairs," I told him. We found it in the kitchen. The fridge hung open, and the wall opposite was dented and smeared with a wet and sticky substance that was probably orange juice. A container of it lay open on the floor, along with half a dozen bottles of various condiments. The faucet was on full force. The sink was stoppered and rapidly filling with hot water. While Chad turned the water off, I looked around the room. When Chad touched my arm, I shook my head. I don't see it. Heaving a sigh, I started cleanup. I seem to be doing that a lot here. I scrubbed the wall and Chad mopped the floor. There was nothing I could do about the dents in the wall, and looking at them, I thought maybe some of them were old. Once everything was as good as it would get, I fixed sandwiches and chips for lunch. Thus fortified, we continued our explorations by going up to the attic. There were actually two attics. The one above Chad's room was accessible by a narrow stairway hidden in a hall closet, maybe the last remnant of a servant's stair. I half expected dust and storage boxes, but the attic held only a modern office with a professional-looking computer set up on a cherry desk. There were skylights for an open-airy feeling to offset the walls of cherry barrister's bookcases weighed down by leather-bound legal tomes. The only whimsical feature was a lacy pillow on the narrow window seat in front of the only window. "You said there was another one?" I asked, standing on the stairs because entering the room